from KQED.
From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Dave Iverson. They take care of kids and assist the elderly, help the disabled, and clean the kitchen. They're domestic workers, without whom many households could not survive. But there's a growing debate about how those individuals are compensated. A bill now before the state legislature would help domestic workers get overtime pay and workmen's compensation. But others are fearful that such changes will drive up costs and prevent the elderly and disabled in particular from being able to afford the help they need. The debate over how we pay domestic workers. That's next on Forum, after this. From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Dave Iverson. How should we compensate the people who come into our homes to care for our children, help the elderly, clean our kitchens, and assist the disabled? Together, they're officially referred to as domestic workers. And what those workers are entitled to is now the subject of a California legislative debate. Assembly Bill 889 has passed the state assembly and is now under consideration in the state Senate. The bill seeks to ensure that domestic workers are eligible for overtime pay, workmen's compensation, and vacation benefits. But opponents worry that those requirements would make the care people need, particularly those who are elderly or disabled, too expensive. Add in the fact that there is a lot of confusion about who would be subject to the new law, and you have a topic that needs some sorting out. And that's what we're going to try to do in our first hour of Forum this morning. Joining us to do that, Gracia Lima. She is the campaign director for California Domestic Workers Coalition, a group that's leading the effort in support of the bill. She's also a former domestic worker. Gracia Lima, good morning.
Hi, good morning. Thank you for having me.
Thanks for joining us. Joining us, too, by phone this morning, Marcy Seville. She's professor of law at Golden Gate University School of Law, also director of the Women's Employment Rights Clinic, which helps provide legal services for domestic workers. She assisted the Domestic Worker Coalition in drafting AB 889. Professor Seville, thanks for being with us as well.
Thanks very much for inviting me.
Robert Nuttleman joins us too. He is a senior associate with Philip J. Griego and Associates. That's an employment law firm which has some concerns about the current legislation. Mr. Nuttleman, thanks for joining us.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
And Jordan Lindsay joins us as well. He's Director of Policy and Public Affairs for the California Association for Health Services at Home, which is an association representing employers and providers of home supportive health services. Mr. Lindsay, thanks for joining us, too.
Good morning, Dave. Nice to be with you.
Happy to have all of you here. It's a complicated topic, important one, given how society is changing and the needs that people have. So we want to do our best to try to sort things out. So let's start with that. Gracia Lima, as a former domestic worker, now helping lead the charge in support of this bill, what's the problem that needs to be solved?
I would just like to make one correction,
yeah,
which is for the bill. Vacation time is out. It was taken out in the Labor Committee. So as of now, the only things that AB 889 would try to address would be workers' compensation, mealtime and rest break.
Overtime pay?
Overtime pay.
Okay.
Kitchen use facilities and
okay.
8 hours.
No, thanks for the clarification. That's important. So
right.
So the vacation part of this equation is no longer
it's
part,
no
of,
longer
it.
Part
right.
of it.
It's no longer part of it. Thanks for the update.
And I think the problem is, as many people would find, is that the laws, California laws, are very confusing for employers. The problem is that you might have two people helping you inside of your home. One of them that is cleaning your house, cooking and cleaning, and one of them that might be taking care of your children. And both of those people have complete different labor protections. And right now, employers are just left up to good intentions. They don't know what a good employer is. And what the bill is trying to do is to provide industry-wide standards that would also give employers clear guidelines as to what is a good employer.
And by employer, we should say that means anyone who hires someone and brings them into their home, either on their own or in the or an employer could also be an agency that
right.
provides those workers to
right.
the home.
And domestic workers right now, they are vulnerable to abuse, and they are vulnerable because of their nature of the work, which is in a private home, and because it's isolated. They can't be as easily unionized, or they can't be as easily organized and educated on their rights. Right now, domestic workers are just in a vulnerable position.
So in your experience, what you've seen often or perhaps experienced yourself or saw other domestic workers that you knew be exposed to are situations where they were asked to work too many hours, mm-hmm. not given enough breaks. Those are the kinds of specific problems that in your judgment need to be addressed?
Absolutely. I'll tell you just one brief story. Me and my mother, we would clean houses in La Jolla. By the law, we're actually entitled to a mealtime and rest break because we were cleaning. We were not taking care of people. And my mother would actually, if I would not be with her, she would actually fear asking for a mealtime. And what she would have to do is she would have to go into a corner and eat whatever fruit she had in her purse so that she wouldn't have to ask for a mealtime. And it was about the fear that they would not be giving her that mealtime. So there's a lot of education that needs to happen. There's a lot of labor protections that still need to be clear.
Well, let's get a little more specificity about what this bill provides, and then we'll hear about some of the concerns about what the bill's provisions include. Marcy Seville is someone who helped draft the coalition. Let's have you respond to some of that. We heard Gracia update us that vacation time is mm-hmm. not part of it. So walk us through the specific provisions. Overtime,
sure.
What would be included with that?
Well, let me start with the what's come out, because that's where some of the confusion is coming from. Some of the objections to the bill had to do with certain things that generated costs, and those things have been removed. So initially there were cost of living, notice of termination, mm-hmm. sick pay and vacation pay. Those have all come out of the bill. Additionally, there was inclusion of domestic workers in Cal OSHA protections, health and safety protections, and that has been removed from the bill. So that is all out. Other things that are out of the bill are some of the lowest wage, the lowest level income recipients. So people who receive care through the in-home supportive services program are not included in the bill. Those are very low-income people. And folks who have developmental disabilities and receive state-funded services through Department of Developmental Services are not within the bill. So quite a bit has been removed already to address cost concerns, both from the public, the employers, that is, and cost concerns from the state. What is in the bill, and this is an attempt to echo what Gracia was saying, it's an attempt both to make the law less complicated, because it is so incredibly complicated that neither workers nor employers can understand it. It is really, I think, the single most complex area of law in the wage and hour field. So both to make it less complex and also to level the playing field so some of the workers who have been most excluded will receive rights. So most domestic workers already have workers' compensation entitlement. This is one of the misconceptions about the bill. The only people who are excluded are those who work, there's a formula, fewer than 52 hours in the prior 92 days. So it's really only the people who are either very short term or come in for a few hours a week that this bill would extend it to. If you have a caregiver in your home or a nanny, you as an employer already have an obligation to provide workers' compensation. And that's also of a great benefit to an employer, so that if someone's injured, they can't be sued in court.
Right.
The person would go through the workers' compensation system. So that's the gist of workers' compensation, is just to expand the coverage so all people get it.
And the other key provision then would be to also add overtime benefits?
Yeah. So again, as Gracie indicated, many, many domestic workers already have an overtime entitlement, although they don't understand that they do, and sometimes the employers don't. It's an extremely complex formula. The people who don't get overtime are people who are called personal attendants. And the gist of that is that it's someone who is a caregiver for an elderly person, a person with a disability, or it could be a nanny, someone caring for children. But the person must be doing not more than 20% of their time on other household duties. So we have this somewhat ridiculous legal situation where both the worker and the homeowner have to do a calculation of whether the person is spending a certain percentage of time, for instance, cooking and cleaning for the whole family,
right,
or if an elder lives in the household, cooking and cleaning for the whole family.
So sorry. Yeah, sorry to jump in, but just to cut to the chase on this, this removes that sort of highly legalistic distinction and makes it possible for anyone who is working in the home to be eligible for overtime. Is that correct?
Right. You're eligible for overtime if you get over the 20%.
Okay. Let's hear from some concerns on the other side of this question. And Robert Nuttleman, again, why don't you start us out on this? As an employment lawyer, it is complicated. Just reading through this material last night, I got confused about sort of who was eligible for what. And frankly, I suspect there are a lot of people listening to this program right now who are saying, really? I have to pay overtime now? Workers' comp is part of the deal now. There's a lot of confusion about this. So help, again, sort out what needs to be fixed, or if in your judgment we already have adequate coverage for people.
Well, as Professor Seville pointed out, I believe that a lot of the laws already are in place. I do agree that there is a lot of confusion, a lot of times not much education on behalf of employers and employees what the various rights and obligations are. In our practice, we represent both employees and employers, so we have a number of people providing home care providers and people employing home care providers and people acting as home care providers. The law as it stands today, without this new bill, everybody's entitled to at least minimum wage. So this bill really, as far as the overtime, is only going to be impacting those personal attendants, those people who are spending 80% of the time supervising, feeding, and dressing elderly, infirmed, or disabled people. Those people are still entitled to minimum wage. They're still entitled to $8 an hour. If you have somebody who's a live-in caregiver working 24 hours a day, that's about $192 a day, about $70,000 a year. By making them exempt from overtime, the wage rate's going to increase to a minimum of $90,000, and in some cases up to $140,000, depending on whether the family decides to hire one or two caregivers.
So again, for that individual, as you're defining it, who currently is exempt from overtime requirements because their primary duties are, as you suggest, sort of caregiving as opposed to other kinds of household responses, that individual would now be eligible for overtime pay. And you're saying there would be a pretty significant bump up in that person's compensation on average?
Yes, either a bump up in that person's pay, or they're going to have to hire three or four people to take the place of one individual.
Okay. And Jordan Lindsay at the California Association for Health Services at Home, your worry then is, I assume, that by adding in that bump, regardless of whether or not you think that's a good idea or not a good idea, it's going to price out care for people who need it most?
That's exactly right. So Gracia and the proponents of the bill are representing the workers, and what we're here to do is convey the concerns of those who use home care, primarily seniors, people with disabilities, as you mentioned. And they use home care to stay safe and healthy in their home. And if AB 889 is passed into law, as currently written, then the cost of home care will dramatically increase. And or their continuity of care will be severely impacted.
Why continuity of care? Why would that be impacted?
Well, it's a good question. So let me get into that just a bit. So if this was a bill just about the overtime exemption, I think we'd be having a different discussion. However, this is a bill about overtime exemption along with sleep time, along with some rather strange provisions about kitchen use. So let me get into that just quickly. So we discussed the overtime exemption and the importance of that in the delivery of care. However, there's also a provision where it would require the personal attendant for a senior, let's use for example, to have 8 hours of uninterrupted sleep. So if you are a 90-year-old woman and you have somebody in your home who's helping you, and
this is a live-in person who's there 24/7?
Correct. Yeah. Correct. And if you have an agreement with them that, okay, we have an agreement, we're not going to pay for your sleep, and this bill would say it has to be 8 hours uninterrupted. Well, gets up in the middle of the night, she has to go to the bathroom, she needs some assistance, maybe to get out of bed or to go to the bathroom. Then this bill would say, okay, now that woman is going to be on the hook to pay for all 8 hours of sleep. And so the proponents are saying, well, that woman should probably just hire another person to come in for those 8 hours. So the overtime exemption, while it is a major, major issue and is going to severely increase the cost of care, there are some other provisions which are really going to impact people and their ability to use home care and to be able to stay in their homes in a practical way.
Right. So we have a complicated equation here, and let's try to sort out sort of our priorities about that, Gracia Lehman, because on the one hand, you have the understandable desire for people who are doing this important work to be compensated fairly. And if they work overtime, to be paid, all understandable. To get the sleep they need, all understandable. Then you hear this other understandable concern, which is that people elderly, this is the fastest growing segment of our population, expected to triple the number of people 85 and older over the next 30 years. They have real needs as well and don't necessarily have a huge amount of income to cover those needs. So as someone who has been in this field, how do you sort that out? What's your judgment on how you weigh those competing needs?
Mm-hmm. Well, like other people have mentioned this, that right now, overtime is almost the only cost item to employers. And we have been saying the history of overtime is that it was set in place so that people would actually give the most efficient hours of their day, meaning that the history of overtime was set in place so that people could actually be efficient and effective workers. We don't have overtime of 10 hours for other. We have some exceptions to overtime for other workers, 10, 12 hours. But the majority of workers have overtime of 8 hours so that they could give the most efficient and effective hours of their day.
What would you say, Gracia Lima, to the elderly individual who says, I want to treat this person as fairly as I can. I'm paying a good wage. I'm paying double minimum wage, let's say, which is not uncommon, $15 to $20 an hour for that sort of care. That's all I can afford. That person is okay with that. This is the situation that I have. What's wrong with that?
Well, what we have been saying is that overtime can be avoided if you schedule people on 8-hour shifts.
Okay.
And
so it gets to that continuity question.
Right.
Yeah.
People on 8-hour shifts. But that is a way to eliminate that cost item for you. It's also a way to prevent and to be sure that you're receiving the quality of care that you deserve, which is if you're having somebody work 10, 12, 15, even 24 hours on the clock, you're not going to be receiving the most efficient and the most effective and quality of care for your own needs.
Gracia Lima is the campaign director for the California Domestic Workers Coalition, the group that is leading the effort to support this bill that is now before the state legislature. Robert Nuttall, respond, if you would, to that, to the need for people to be not only treated fairly, but also to make sure that they get the breaks that they need, that you don't want one person sort of on the clock continually.
Well, you know, under California law, a lot of people are exempt from overtime if they meet certain requirements. For example, a manager who only has to earn $33,000 a year, you can work them 24 hours a day and not have to pay them overtime, or sheep herders or irrigators or ski lift operators or camp counselors. And by the way they've done it in this bill, where they're just saying, no, you just have to pay overtime, there's no way you can do a flat salary to meet the exemption. you're increasing the cost unnecessarily. If they were to, say, modify and say if you pay somebody a salary equivalent to 2 times minimum wage, something equivalent to what we have for exempt managers, executives, professionals, then it would at least eliminate the cost burden. Absolutely, we want to have workers taking care of our elderly and our infirm that have they're rested, relaxed, they can pay attention. But also, under the law, the employers would have to, in fact, under existing law, the employers do have to pay even personal attendance for the time that they're sleeping. So if they're sleeping, I'm paying at least minimum wage now under the laws, I'll be paying double time for the time that they're sleeping.
Let me ask another part of this equation, and Marcy Seville, maybe you can jump in on this, which is it occurs to me that there's quite apart from the legislative debate, there almost needs to be an educational campaign about what even current law provides. I think there are a lot of people who would not know about overtime requirements, who would not know about workman's comp requirements, who would not know about either withholding tax or paying into Social Security. I mean, aren't we sort of scraping – if you scrape beneath the surface, there's another whole issue here, which is a lot of this is done under the table without necessarily following even existing law, let alone what would be required by the new legislation.
Absolutely. And, you know, one of the things that that we try to work at my office is both providing that education to the workers because, for instance, many housekeepers who work overtime, they might be a live-in or work a long day, don't understand that they already have the rights. And likewise, we frequently get calls from employers, household employers, who have questions, and we are happy to respond to them because we like to see employers who want to understand the law and comply with it. I've been doing this work for several decades, and quite frankly, I sometimes get confused because it is so complicated. So I think we've made efforts to write some articles about it and got a lot of response to that so that people are clear on it. We see agencies, particularly agencies that have are nationwide, who don't understand California law because there's also an interplay between California law and federal law that people need to understand. So I completely agree that the education is very important. I just want to respond quickly to one
just briefly,
comment.
If you would, because we're coming up on a station break.
Oh, just that the notion that these people are making $70,000 and $90,000 a year, we don't see that very much. And that calculus presumes that this person is working 52 weeks a year, 24 hours a day. And we have to think very carefully about what the impact on people of that would be.
Okay. We'll hold it there and we'll lead our way into a station break and also ask for your questions about this issue. If you're a domestic worker and want to join our conversation about what you see the needs as being in your profession, we'd love to hear from you at 866-733-6786. And if you're on the other side of this equation, if you're someone who's bringing in care for someone in your home, be that a child or someone who's disabled or someone who's older, we'd like to hear your concerns and questions about this as well. It is a complicated question, and we want to get the best answers that we can. Here's the number if you want to join us again. It's 866-733-6786, 866-733-6786. You can email us your questions at forum@kqed.org, forum@kqed.org, or you can go to our website, kqed.org/forum, and add in your questions there. We'll take all of those questions when we come back. Robert Nuttleman has to leave us. Mr. Nuttleman, thanks so much for being part of this first part of our program.
Thank you very much.
And in the second half, we'll be joined by someone else who has concerns about the new law. That's Deborah Doctor with Disability Rights California. She'll join our conversation along with Jordan Lindsay, Gracia Lima, and Marcy Seville when we return. Again, here's the phone number, 866-733-6786, 866-733-6786. This is Forum on KQED. I'm Dave Iverson. Welcome back to Forum. I'm Dave Iverson. Our topic this hour, compensation for domestic workers, the people who care for kids, care for the elderly, care for the disabled, clean, a whole variety of professions that are so crucial to so many households. The question is, how should those people be compensated? How should they be treated? Is current law sufficient to make sure that people are treated in the way they ought to be? Or are these additional provisions that are specified in AB 889, which has passed one house of the California legislature but not the other, are those needed to guarantee guarantee certain things like overtime pay in particular, along with certain sleep provisions that we were talking about in the first part of our program. Here are numbers, 866-733-6786. Email us at form@kqed.org. And we'll go right to our phone calls. Since our phone lines are full, we'll try to get through as many calls as we can. Izzy in Sacramento is first up. Izzy, go ahead, please.
Hi. My name's Izzy. I'm a personal attendant, and basically I work about 70 hours a week right now, and I only get paid about $10 an hour. And I would absolutely love overtime, but the thing is that I think that if overtime was added, instead of paying a personal attendant's overtime, they would just hire more people. And that would actually have a really bad effect on people like me, where all of a sudden my hours would be decreased from 70 to probably just back down to 40.
So you want those hours even if they're not paid overtime, Izzy, correct?
Right. I would rather have those hours than have overtime and not get paid those.
Yeah. Really interesting point and perspective. Thanks for adding that in. Gracia, you want to respond to Izzy's concern?
Is today your day off?
No, actually, I work later today. I work every day of the month except for 4 days.
But you must hear that concern, Gracia, by many of your colleagues who want the hours, who are working hard and trying to support their families. And their concern is that if these provisions go into effect, then suddenly Izzy's hours are going to be cut from 70 to 40, and they'll bring someone else in to do those extra 30, and she'll be the one who's hurt by this.
Right. But that would be that also another family gets the income that they wouldn't be getting if that person is still working 70 hours. So it's two families being supported by the work hours rather than just one family who gets. How many days do you say you got off, Izzy?
I only have about 4 or 5 days a month off.
Wow.
Yeah. Izzy, thanks. Thanks for adding in your perspective on this. Let's get another one, another point of view on the air. Vanessa joins us next from San Jose. Vanessa? Go ahead.
Hello.
Vanessa. Yep, you're on the air.
Hi, this is Vanessa. I'm calling from San Jose, and I just wanted to voice my support for this bill. I think that cost is never a legitimate excuse for extending rights to people, and it's very important to note that domestic workers in California and all over the world are primarily immigrant women who are low-income workers who work very hard, and their work is very dignified, and they deserve the extension of overtime rights. They deserve every right that every other worker needs, and I don't believe that paying them or an increase in cost is a legitimate excuse for keeping this work in the shadows.
Vanessa, thanks.
And under the table.
Thanks. Thanks for adding that in. Let's get a response from Deborah Doctor, who joins us now. She's a legislative advocate for Disability Rights California, has concerns about the current bill. Deborah Doctor, first, thanks for joining us for this part of our program.
Thank you so much, Dave, for including me.
So you've heard just in those first two callers, I think, in some ways, the nutshell of this debate, which is workers who want those extra hours because they need them, but then the other side of the coin, which is, you know, people should always be fairly compensated, and it's not fair to penalize those workers, especially immigrant workers, from getting the pay they deserve. How do you respond to that?
Well, I think the third side of the coin, as it were, is the economic reality of the people with disabilities who employ home care workers. I absolutely agree with the sponsors that the work has dignity and is important, but we're talking about a group of employers who we don't have individual information, but on the whole, the statistics we have say that they have half the household income of most Californians. So what we're trying to do here is balance the needs and realities of two groups of low-income people. And going back to the caller who just spoke about cost should be no barrier, if that were the case, then the bill should certainly be extended so the state isn't insulated from the cost. The bill says that the state does not have to extend these benefits to the in-home supportive services caregivers who provide services for about 430,000 people, because the bill would have been dead on arrival if the state had been on the hook. But there are
so just to be clear, sorry to jump in, but people may not be familiar with that program. That's a specific state program that's aimed at providing these sorts of care services to the low income, where the state is the employer. And in this case, you're making the argument that the state's exempting itself. Yeah.
Well, the legislation is exempting the state, because the bill would not have survived the legislature if there had been additional state costs, especially in this economy. But it leaves the cost to individuals who are low income themselves and maybe just have a few dollars over what it would have taken for them to be eligible for the state subsidy. So we're insulating a public entity and some private entities, but saying right. that individuals, regardless of income, have to bear the additional yeah. cost. So I think we need a lot more discussion about how we can balance the needs of these two groups.
Well, let's try to do that and get some thoughts about how you balance those. Jordan Lindsay, rejoin us if you would at the California Association for Health Services at Home. It is a balancing act, and I think everyone probably participating in the program this morning has a desire for there to be fairness. It's, I guess, in the eyes of the beholder. Okay. Any thoughts on how you balance these competing needs that we're describing this morning?
Absolutely. And again, we also want to confirm one of the caller's comments that the work is extremely important and dignified, and we definitely try to professionalize it as much as we can.
And it's going to be more and more common as our society ages in particular.
Absolutely. As the population continues to gray and get older, it's going to be much more needed. I think that you mentioned something earlier, which kind of gets to at some of the point of how we can find some solutions, is that one of the biggest issues here is that there are abuses happening behind closed doors. There's no question about it. There are abuses happening towards workers. There's abuses happening towards seniors, people with disabilities, and there's people being taken advantage of on both sides. And these are the types of things that happen in the shadows, as you mentioned. And a public awareness campaign, I think, can be much more effective than legislation at this point to really bring education, awareness, and even increase law enforcement capabilities to go after some of these egregious acts. And unfortunately, the bill is currently written. I don't think it would have much impact, if any at all, at what is happening in the shadows and underground, as you mentioned. So I think we can all come together and agree that we have to have a much wider public awareness campaign to make sure that both the employers, whether it be a company or an individual, are not doing things that are violating the rights of the worker, as well as they're not incurring liability. They should be paying certain taxes and liability insurances, et cetera, if they're going over a certain threshold. And then also protecting the consumers and making sure that they know their rights if a worker, and then educating the community around us. And we'd be remiss if we don't use this opportunity right now
yeah.
to the listeners, saying if you know somebody out there who, whether it be the individual using home care services or the worker who is being abused by either side, please contact law enforcement, contact one of our agencies. And if you are employing a home care worker, please know what you are responsible for in terms of compensation, liability, insurance, et cetera, taxes. And I think that a public awareness campaign could be, at this point, more effective than legislation, and we could all get behind that.
Let's get back to our listeners and hear what else their concerns are. Lots of emails and calls coming in on this question. So, Noelle, go ahead, please, with your question on this.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. My parents are supporting my sister, who's severely disabled, in a supported living home. And their regional center has recently, you know, created a whole bunch of rules that say, well, because she can partially see, she can't get this, and because she can partially do this, she won't get this money. And I'm wondering, if this bill passes, are all of these costs going to fall back onto my parents? Who's going to help supplement the costs that the regional centers are taking away when, you know, we're already taking money out of our own pockets to help with her care and her supported living with these, you know, amazing caregivers that she already has?
And Noelle, your family member is in an institutional setting, is that correct?
No, she lives in a home with a couple of caregivers. She has CHARGE syndrome, and so she needs 24-hour care.
Okay.
She doesn't necessarily need assistance all the time. She can walk on her own. She needs a sighted guide. But, you know, she has limited abilities. But right now, the regional center is telling us that they won't pay for certain things because, you know, of the abilities that she does have.
Yep.
And I'm worried that these costs will fall back onto my parents who are already, you know, paying and paying and paying more and more. And I just don't know where that money is going to continue to come from.
This probably gets us into a somewhat different arena of compensation than the specific what's specifically covered by this bill. But Marcy Seville, any thoughts that you can provide? Noel, please.
Yeah, it sounds to me like this is someone living outside of your home. Is that correct?
Oh, I'm sorry. I already let Noel go. So.
Okay. Well, it sounded to me like this was a situation of someone not living in the household of the family, in which case it is not covered by this bill.
Okay. So sounds.
And a quick comment on that. Unfortunately, over the past few years, as we all know, budget cuts have just slashed programs, whether it be through regional centers or IHSS, as we discussed earlier. And we really need to stop and think specifically about AB 889. Is this the time when all the other public services are being cut to say, now we're going to increase costs for those who aren't receiving public services and have to pay for it out of pocket themselves?
Well, let me let Gracia respond to that point before we get on to our next caller. Gracia?
I think that the public awareness campaign is a good idea. It's something that we have been doing for years, not just from the Women's Employment Rights Clinic, but also from different nonprofits. We have a coalition of about 100 plus organizations that they do public awareness campaign on the ground.
On Jordan's point that because everything else is being cut right now and times are so tight and everyone's anxious about the economy, now is not the time to drive up the costs of care.
I think that now is the time to standardize an industry. I think that now is the time to provide workers' protections for the most vulnerable, because during economic crisis is when workers are more overexploited, they're more vulnerable to abuse. So, if now it's not the time, we have been asking for labor protections for more than 50 years. The movie The Help portrayed women who were domestic workers, African-American domestic workers, and they have been asking for this labor protection for 50 years. So if now it's not the time, then when?
Yeah. Email coming in from Kelvin, who raises an interesting question. Should the benefit of room and board that's often provided be considered a part of the compensation formula for full-time live-in caregivers? Marcy Seville, how does that work in? Is there a way of compensating or calculating that particular benefit?
Yes, there actually is an existing regulation. There are very specific rules about when there can be what are called meal and lodging credits, how much those credits could be, and the provisions for it. So that is something that is in place.
Here's another email from Sarah, who writes in, my family employed a nanny for 3 years, $21 an hour. We paid into taxes, overtime, gave 2 weeks of vacation and sick pay. We also gave 3% cost of living increases. We felt very strongly about compensating our nanny legally and simultaneously, however, felt pushback from our employee to not report her income. So that's part of this difficulty, too. Is it not in fairness, Marcy Seville, oftentimes the employee doesn't want all of this written down because they don't want to have to necessarily report it for tax purposes?
Well, you know, those are assumptions about what people in general want. Most of the workers that I see, they want things done legitimately. They want to have Social Security paid, particularly when someone is an older elder care provider. Social Security is critical. So I think we have to be very careful about making broad assumptions about what people in general do and don't want.
Fair enough. Michael in San Francisco has our next question. Michael, go ahead.
Hi, I'm with the Great Panthers, and we've got a certain amount of familiarity with the situation of home care for elders, and we thoroughly agree that that home care and care for elders and people with disability needs to be a needs to be more respected. People need more training. People need protection against health and safety protections. They need job protections in terms of wages and benefits and against deportation. It's a big picture, and there's a process that's underway right now called Caring Across Generations that wants to address all of these issues.
And Michael, as someone who represents a group that's advocating on behalf of seniors, the Grey Panthers, are you comfortable in also then paying more for that kind of care?
Absolutely. I was just about to say that none of this is going to be able to happen unless the people who are actually doing the work are that this is a decent job.
Yeah.
We don't want to have the situation where your caregiver is coming in every day and you're wondering whether they're constantly looking for some other kind of job which might be better.
Michael, thanks. I'm going to hold you there just because our phone lines are so busy and we want to get as many viewpoints included in our program as we can. But thanks. Thanks so much for adding that in. And let's go next to Peggy, who joins us in Montera this morning. Peggy, go ahead.
Yes. Thank you for taking my call. My mother was in her 90s, and she had a live-in caregiver and through an agency. My mother, the woman, earned $60,000 a year. She was there 10 days, had 4 days off. She had her own room. She could drive, so she could take my mother's car and go shopping. She had a lot of time to herself in the afternoons. It worked absolutely beautifully. It would be insane to hire somebody for 8 hours to sit up awake for somebody to go to the bathroom once or twice. They became so close that the woman's name was Sonia, came to the hospital when my mother was in the hospital in her final days and sat with her voluntarily, even though my mother did pay her. My sister and I paid her. It was a fabulous arrangement. The woman was very well compensated, all the benefits, and I think what you're asking for three separate people to come in every day would just be chaotic and it wouldn't work.
Yeah, Peggy, thanks. Thanks for stating it in such clear and personal terms. Marcy Seville, you want to respond?
Sure. One of the things is that one of the misconceptions there is that if someone has to be on the premises, sleeping or not, they actually are now required to be paid because they're under the employer's control. So that's an example of one of the situations where people are often very confused.
So you're saying that's already the case?
Yes, that's already the case. If that caregiver cannot leave and is under the employer's control, I think Jordan echoed this earlier, that person's entitled to pay, and that's one of the misconceptions we see. The new bill allows for an agreement on exclusion of sleep time. So we're trying to address some of those issues. We're also in attempting to have ongoing discussions, particularly with advocates in the disability community, to see whether we can address the overtime situation. Discussions that are ongoing.
Deborah Doctor at Disability Rights California, I wonder if you'd respond some to what our last caller so clearly articulated, which is the personal part of this and the relationships that develop. And if people are both happy with that arrangement, it becomes kind of a, if it's not broken, why fix it? Deborah Doctor?
Yes. It's a fair question. We don't want to see workers exploited, but we also don't want to see people with disabilities disadvantaged. And so it would be good if the supporters and author of the bill would consider some flexibility, as is already available in some other wage orders, for a negotiated flexible work week that is agreeable without coercion on both sides of the equation.
It sounds like, Gracia Lima, that's in the works from both what Marcy Seville said earlier,
right,
that there's room to still finesse this.
Yes. I think that it's great that we're having this debate, because I don't think we would be having this debate if legislation was not in place. Even with public campaigns, even with awareness, I don't think anything brings more to the table at debate as legislation. And the other point that I would like to make is that absolutely we want to keep care affordable. We want to make sure that workers are being respected, and it's just about coming to the table with clear ideas of where we can compromise and clear ideas of where, you know, what is important to us and having that quality of care. The other point that I would just like to make, we want to have those family relationships, those close relationships. That's great. But also there's this misconception that all women want to have that. Most women are professionals. That is their professional. They are professional caregivers. They don't want to be looked as part of their family. They want to be treated as a professional.
Lots of interesting comments coming in via email. Let me read a few of them. One person writes in, if this passes, home care workers will not be able to get 12-hour or 24-hour shifts because their employers are not going to be able to pay overtime for more than 8 hours per day or 12 hours a day. So the home care workers will have to work for several different employers in order to get enough hours to make a living. Eric adds, I truly sympathize with the plight of these workers, but like many families, we find it financially impossible to comply with federal and state law. I recently spent many hours trying to figure out what it would cost us to pay withholding taxes and workers' compensation, but I found the whole process overwhelming. I couldn't even figure out what an annual premium for workers' comp would cost us. It is so confusing. And Christina writes in, I'm currently doing a national domestic worker survey with the National Domestic Workers Alliance. My mom has been a housekeeper in Silicon Valley for the past 25 years. I support AB 889. Domestic workers are a part of a lot of our lives. They make sure our homes are clean and safe. They're loyal, and we need to make sure they are well cared for. And back to our calls. Boots joins us next from Los Angeles today. Boots, go ahead.
Hi, good morning. My name is Boots, and I support AB 889. And being a caregiver for more than 10 years right now, I do support the 8 hours of uninterrupted sleep, or even a 5 hours uninterrupted sleep for those caregivers who are on a leave-in job, the one that works for a 24-hour shift.
Okay, Boots, thank you about the need for that kind of rest period. Jordan Lindsay, you want to respond to that very basic sort of concern for someone who wants to get the rest they need in order to be able to do the job well?
Absolutely, and it's all a balancing act, as we've been using the word balance, of the needs of the caretakers and the needs of the individual, the senior, the person with disability. We wish at the beginning of this process that Assemblyman Amiano and the sponsors came to some of us and said, hey, let's try to balance this. Unfortunately, we were kind of forced with a bill, and now we're having to respond. So there are careful balances to make. And as the example I used before, 8 hours uninterrupted sleep. Well, how many people out there, how many of us don't need to wake up at some time within 8 hours to use the bathroom, to do something? And if you need assistance, now all of a sudden you have to pay for all those 8 hours just for waking up once. It's those types of things in the bill which just may not be practical. It could be great for the worker, but are they really practical to implement? No, there's better ways to do this. And that's what we would like to sit down with Assemblyman Amiano some further and have everybody stop with and think about the bill and the impacts it'll have.
And Marcy Seville, just a brief response on that point, because it does sound like this is still a work in progress. Is that a point at which you think that there could still be negotiation?
Negotiations and legislation all the way through. And for instance, the sleep issue is something that the Assemblyman has some language to propose to deal with emergencies so that people wouldn't be on the hook for the 8 hours of sleep if someone has to get up for an emergency situation during the night. The reality with legislation is negotiations continue until the 11th hour or the 12th hour, and I'm sure that that will be happening with this bill. I want to offer just one tip to one of the email people about the workers' compensation, which is that if you have a homeowner or a renter's policy, that can encompass workers' compensation.
Oh.
So that's something that people should always look into.
No, that's very useful. Let me read this last email, and just in the couple minutes we have left, have that be a takeoff point for your, for some last thoughts from each of you. Liz writes in, I've been a child caregiver for 13 years. If I did not take under-the-table pay with no overtime, I wouldn't have a job. The families I've worked for would prefer to hire another caregiver who would accept those terms. I am not an immigrant. I still need a job. In this industry, beggars can't be choosers. So again, you have some pushback from the caregiver side of this about, like we heard from another individual at the beginning, who just want the work, and that's part of this equation too. Last thoughts from each of you, just briefly, please. Deborah Doctor, a quick last thought about what we should be thinking about as this bill proceeds.
I think we should be thinking about balancing the needs, getting to a good faith discussion, and if the bill is really for the benefit also of people with disabilities, asking them what they would need to make this work relationship work.
Marcy Seville.
Yeah, I think that everyone is looking at a fair balance of the needs. That it's caregivers who care profoundly about the people that they care for, and we're looking here to balance that with treating these people respectfully and treating their work as true work that deserves real income.
And Jordan Lindsay.
My final comments go to our California state legislators, and we've been talking with them often about this bill. This bill has gone through up to this point. However, I think the conversation today points out that there's still some significant issues with it. This bill needs to be resolved before it continues to move forward.
And Gracia Lima, we started with you. Let me give you the last word.
Well, first of all, thank you for inviting us. Thank you for discussing this important issue. I think we need to professionalize the workforce. It's in the benefit of both workers and employers, the quality of care that they receive, the quality of care, it's about caring for caregivers.
Thanks, all of you, for participating in this important discussion. This discussion will continue at the state legislature, by the way, tomorrow. There'll be a hearing on this before the Senate Appropriations Committee. Thanks, Monday, rather, not tomorrow, Monday, that hearing will take place. Thanks to Marcy Seville, Gracia Lima, Jordan Lindsay, Deborah Doctor, and earlier to Robert Nuttleman for bringing their thoughts to this important conversation. Forum is produced by Kevin Guillory, Judy Campbell, and Tina Larberg. Our engineer today is Danny Bringer. Dan Zoll is our senior editor. Raul Ramirez, the executive producer. I'm Dave Iverson, and this is Forum on KQED.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio and the Germanicos Foundation and the Generosity Foundation in honor of Louise and Claude Rosenberg.